Professor Zengtring, thank you very much for, in 14 minutes, giving us 5,000 years of history and the extraordinary range of projects at big scale and at small scale, which I think are revealing. Now, Anthony Mayer is the chief executive of the Greater London Authority. This is a very important title, a title which also underscores the fact that he should be in London today, dealing with the issues that we know about. And we're really indebted to you, Anthony, for coming over yesterday and staying. We really appreciate that. Anthony is not only a most able administrator who deals with Mayor Ken Livingstone and his political desires by being responsible effectively for managing the city, but I think extremely interesting for this debate and this interdisciplinary discussion was also a member of the Urban Task Force in the United Kingdom, which is a group chaired by the architect Richard Rogers, which a number of years ago tried to reshape national thinking about cities, and Anthony was a key figure in that. So could you join me in welcoming Anthony Mayer?
Good morning, everybody. And Rick, you've got a job. Give me a shout at 12 minutes. I can go on for hours. First, I want to show you this slide, which I show in any presentation I talk about anything, for the simple reason I think it's the best slide ever made. And I find it completely fascinating that you see the urbanization of Europe, you see that they clearly keep their lights on in Moscow, and most interestingly and amusingly, in the North Sea, there aren't some undiscovered city-states in the middle, those oil rigs. Whilst you're looking at it and appreciating it, I just want to make a few introductory points. First of all, I'm deliberately going to give you an overview in my presentation. My detractors would say, by that I mean I'm going to operate at the level of superficiality I'm comfortable with. I'm going to try to make the obvious seem profound, always the sign of a good speech. What I'm going to do is very definitely, after discussion with Ricky, is give you a context for the design density and investment issues you're going to be discussing in more detail, which is presumably why I'm on very early on. And secondly, I'm going to give some pointers about this critical linkage, which has been alluded to by Richard Sennett, between, if you like, the physical and the human. That linkage, I think, in the whole of future urban policy is crucial and has been ignored. I'm not going to, interestingly, talk about terrorism at all. When I prepared my slides 2 days ago, an interesting fact in itself, this issue was not amongst the main issues that were occurring to me, and paradoxically, I hope it does not remain, thanks to CNN, an issue that is actually going to determine the future of urbanism. Something for discussion later. I'm going to give a London perspective, but and as with all my talks around the world, I hope what I'm going to say is going to be entirely global in application. So for London, urban change is urban growth. For China, the numbers there are not very interesting. For Europe, they're hugely interesting. That over a 15-year period, London's population is going to grow by the size of its England's third largest city. We're going to have to accommodate a population equal to Manchester, Leeds, Liverpool, Sheffield within London's boundaries. Main causes of this growth are, first of all, natural population growth. We've got a very young population because of high prices in London. When you get old, you leave London to die. You sell your house and go and live in a chalet by the beach. But secondly, because London is now no longer really, strictly speaking, an English town at all, it's a global town, massive inward migration in two polarized groups. One is the world's knowledge economy glitterati, but secondly, the very poor. Huge challenge coping with these two demands. In terms of jobs, staggering increase over a 15-year period, estimated minimum 600,000 jobs. The main and overwhelming source is now jobs in the global knowledge economy, finance, research and development, creative industries. By and large, London has now no manufacturing industry. Its industries now are becoming predominantly global. And it's no coincidence that, much to my astonishment, we won the Olympic bid on the back of one of the world's three finest spatial master planners, and on the back, clearly, of one of the three best public relations company, where all the other bid had people like me there. Our bid was led at the presentation by a 14-year-old black girl. That's what I call PR. In terms of, against that background, the challenges of growth, here are my top five, and I invite you in hope to agree and get a relationship going that you see where these challenges are applying to you. First of all, high house prices. House prices in London have increased by about 120% over the last 8 years. Incomes have risen by CDOT 25%. A whole generation of people now cannot afford to get into the housing market. Huge problem for what we would call key workers. Secondly, despite London's massive existing fixed rail infrastructure network, probably the biggest in the world with its suburban rail system, we've now got serious problems of overcrowding and capacity. Investment has not kept up with the demands on it. Thirdly, and I'll come on to this, well, I'll come into all five of them in more detail, huge and increasing pressures on the centre of London, more of that anon. Fourthly, all the development opportunities, all the easy development opportunities in London have now been done. We're now entirely on brownfield sites, and the Shanghai is going to find out in its preparation for the Expo 210, brownfield sites ain't half tricky to develop. And finally, huge problem for many, many of the world's conurbations, coping with huge increases in waste in an environmentally sound fashion. So first of all, house prices, and one of Richard Rogers' favourite slides. This is a for real condemnation of the quality of design in London. This is immediately next to the Thames, 4 miles away from Big Ben, and was put up in the last 10 years. In terms of complacency, there is not a lot of room for our designers yet. In terms of addressing these problems of prices, an anxious debate's gone on between, do you make it easier for people to buy houses, or do you increase supply? We're coming down very strongly that if you just focus on making it easier to buy houses by subsidising people, all you'll do, if you don't increase the supply, is increase prices further. So we're going for a supply-led solution to affordability. Second, a huge premium that by and large has been over-neglected since the war in England on basically higher density, one of the themes of this conference, but with a premium on first-class design to actually make sure that you're building buildings that actually people find it attractive to live in and want to live in. And finally, a premium that has been overlooked, is it's a fat lot of use providing a housing solution by creating a new estate without actually saying you want people to live there in the long term. If they're going to live there in the long term, this horrible phrase sustainability comes in. You've got to provide the transport links, the first-class public realm, the first-class design, and critically, jobs. I now turn to my second of my five major issues, transport capacity. This looks like a good news slide, lots of buses, and it's a real one. The snag is, I fancy all of them were stationary, and many of them will be empty, so no too complacency there. In terms of addressing the challenges of transport improvement, we have a real difficulty that all the evidence is you get more people from A to B quicker by fixed rail. Your snag with fixed rail is that in a democracy, it entails huge amounts of consultation, legislation, planning, is very, very long term, is also consuming huge amounts of public money. And in most Western European countries, you can say transport investment has eventually been provided, but it's too slow. In London, massive problem at the moment. It's been going 20 years with the equivalent of the Parisian RAR Line A and East-West Line. That's been in planning for 20 years. It's still 10 to 20 years away. If you can't get your fixed investment, premium on buses, where we do lead the way in London because we've had to in terms of dedicating public bus lanes and enforcement of those bus lanes. It's now getting almost impossible to get a car into London and park it. I count that every time my wife brings our little sports car into the centre of London, it costs me 50 quid every three visits when she gets a parking violation, and she still brings the car in and I still pay because I love her. $100. And the final one, which I'll delighted to talk about later, is the first time it's been tried outside Singapore and a bit of Melbourne, congestion charging. My wife doesn't only now get fined, but she's got to pay $12 to get into the centre of London. In theory, this should be putting off people. Traffic is down by 15%, but it's clearly not yet putting off my wife. More of that anon when I get home. Third of the themes, and I'm sorry I'm speaking quickly. Am I doing all right on time? God, I'm going to have to speed up. So I'm now going to start gabbling. So if anybody, watch my lips. Pressures on the centre. Universal problem. I got an hour on it at a conference in Leningrad, St. Petersburg, only the other month, is that basically your existing urban settlements were designed to cope with significantly smaller populations. And London has made it more difficult for itself in having a green belt, which is appropriately the area shown in green. 1947, you cannot build on it. London is now defined by a piece of planning legislation that is 55 years old. The only bits you can now build on is the black bit, and if you're growing by 800,000 population, this is difficult. What is the way that we're going to try to approach it? Two ways, uncannily similar to my predecessor's speech. One is this notion of the polycentric city. You've got to start building regional centres. Secondly, you've got to go for growth corridors. Our two big ones, more in a minute, are the Thames Gateway East and up where the Olympic site is going to be towards Cambridge. My fourth theme is brownfield development, where, if you could go on to slide four, sorry. brownfield development, where basically what we're going to do is go eastwards. We're very, very lucky, and I didn't know whether we were going to win, and I think you criminologists in the audience, when I said Olympics bid legacy, here's my proof that I didn't think we were going to win. I was going to say that even we'd lost to Paris, there would seriously be a good legacy, so you can now believe me. Fortunately for us, where the Olympic Village and all the ancillary development is in the most underdeveloped part of, one of the most underdeveloped parts of Western Europe. Massive opportunity, very, very difficult. Because of the second issue I want to go, most brownfield sites are contaminated. I think most nations, certainly England, in terms of having what they call contaminated land remediation regimes, where you pay for certification to insure yourself against the fact that land's not remediated, have licenses, etc. We're still not good at public sector providers in providing basically developers with the certainty that land's been cleared. I think the last thing is in these massive developments, I think my predecessor for Shanghai made it very, very clear. It's no use now just doing ad hoc development. You've got to actually have the vision for the corridors and plan them so that you do get the transport, the jobs, the public realm and the housing all provided in context to actually make your urban area somewhere where people want to live. Finally, could just go back to the slide. This is one of the metropolitan elite of London's tricks. We create huge amounts of public waste. I don't know how we've done it. 70% of London's waste is put into holes in the ground outside London. For reasons I cannot understand, people have been happy to accept our waste. We can no longer do this. We're going to have to be self-sufficient. There are no holes in the ground in London. We're going to therefore have to set up huge areas of London to have incinerators or biological treatment plants. Massive issues about planning for what almost by definition are unwelcome facilities. I love my idea of a waste incinerator as long as it's 10 miles away from us. Thirdly, we've got a real debate going on which we haven't solved, is intellectually most British people prefer their waste treated biologically rather than incinerated. Huge technological problems of an issue that now nobody's, 10 years ago nobody was interested in because we put it all into holes in the ground 70 miles away. Now I would say is up there amongst our five major issues. Which then leads me to where next. What we've got to have, and why people like me do like coming to these conferences and having these debates, we want vision and we want critically visionaries. Too much of municipal government in England in the post-war period has been characterised by caution and mediocrity in its municipal leaders. We need people coming out with a vision that is shared with people in this audience. There's no point all of us agreeing unless we get our municipal leadership actually there and engaged, which is why I'm here and where certainly Ken Livingstone is an iconic figure now in terms of his caring for London, that vision for London. Secondly, I think coming up very fast is the impact of information technology and its effect on the urban form. My guess is within 20 years, more and more people will not have to work in offices. If that is the case, then the opportunities of them voting with their feet, either to smaller satellite offices in more attractive countries or more attractive smaller towns, they will take it. At the moment, the agenda is urban, urban, urban. We are the new meisters of everything we see in terms of the way people live. My message to all of us is do not be complacent. Unless we get our cities right, the impact of information technology and people voting with their feet could be devastating and quick. And my final point is that I hope for my five issues I have stirred chords with you that actually London's problems are more closely shared with cities like Shanghai, Berlin, New York, than they are with smaller cities in England like Leeds and Manchester, that the problems of urbanism on the grand scale are now international. The more debates we can have, the more exchanges of this sort, the more both myself and Mayor Ken Livingstone welcome it.